Hey, Anna, it's February, one of your favorite months of the year.
That's right.
Because of?
Snow.
Oh, I was thinking the holiday in February.
President's Day?
No, the other holiday in February.
Oh, Valentine's.
Remember rehearsal? We rehearsed this.
I thought maybe you were tying in something with the President's space program.
Valentine's Day.
Yes, oh my gosh,
my favorite as a romantic myself, my favorite holiday.
This is a perplexed look on my face right now, but
I'm just reading what that says. Right. Valentine's Day, my favorite
holiday.
Did you know that there is a nebula out there in space called the Heart Nebula?
Aww.
And it's red. It's shaped like a heart.
Oh, my gosh. It's perfect.
And I guess I should say the rest of what I was going to say.
What?
It's full of gas. I wasn't meaning to go that way, but it's true. It's what it is.
A true romantic's commentary on the Heart Nebula.
Yes. But so for Valentine's Day, we do encourage our listeners to look up the Heart Nebula. It's a pretty cool looking formation in our Milky Way galaxy, 7,500 light years away. And it's red in color because of all the stars that are in the center of it, giving off all this energy. And it definitely looks like a heart.
But when telling your sweethearts about it, leave out the gas part.
I guess we'll leave the
gas
part.
Come on, Dean. You were feels like red and deep car, you know, heart-shaped, and Dean's all like, and then it's like, oh, and it's full of gas.
Yeah. No, I can't fake this romance and stuff. So.
Are you exhausted?
Yeah.
You know, like, lay down. You're like, I can't. This is wearing you out.
Let's just get back to the show.
Let's do that.
From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. Dean's the astronomer, and I'm here to keep his feet on the ground. On this episode, we talk with David Eicher, the editor of Astronomy Magazine and co-author with Dr. Brian May of the book Mission Moon 3D, A New Perspective on the Space Race.
Well, Anna, we're glad to have you back. Welcome back after the month off.
I had to step away. That's right.
It's the stress. It's too stressful here.
Of celebrity.
And the fame.
The constant interview requests. Yeah. But
we're glad to have you back.
Well, thank you. And a big thanks to our dear friend Lauren Worley for stepping in and doing a little too good a job being your temporary co-host.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're saying. to most people.
I don't want to crush my dream quite yet. She was great.
She was great. What do you got for us now? So you've been watching some stuff in
on your
time away
That's right. I got things going on.
What's the things in the news that got your attention?
So many things. I'm really excited to talk to Dave Eicher because he's great and Brian May is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But also the, I don't know the acronym, but the DART stuff.
The DART mission.
That is literally what I know it is, the DART stuff.
Yes.
I'm just like, oh, this is cool. And then
So this kind of broke a couple weeks ago when NASA released this idea that they were going to purposefully crash into an asteroid.
That's right.
Purposefully.
That's what they did with my little boo-boo Cassini.
Yeah, well, they crashed into Saturn, but they want to crash into an asteroid. Now, the reasoning behind this is they want to see what happens to the asteroid, because imagine this, in the distant future, we see an asteroid coming at the Earth, and we know it's going to intersect with the Earth. What are we going to do about it?
We're going to call Bruce Willis.
We're going to call Bruce I don't know. He might be retired.
That's a good point. Okay, fine. Fair enough.
They want to practice for this possible scenario. And so they're going to aim at this asteroid that is not going to hit us. We know it's not going to hit us, but we want to aim at it and impact it to see what an impact will do to the asteroid. And can we move it way
like
we want to move
it? Oh, like knock it off course.
Yes. So it's a practice. Oh. And so DART stands for Double Asteroid Redirection Test.
Yeah, you looked that up beforehand.
I did, because I'm not good on acronyms.
Not,
it's not very good. But this is their test, so they're testing it out.
Uh-huh.
So they're going to aim at this asteroid called Didymus, who has a moon. So it's an asteroid.
Wait, they named the asteroid?
Yeah, the asteroid has a name. All of the asteroids have names or numbers that are out there.
Oh.
Because I got one named after me.
God, you're so glad I asked about that.
Oh, yeah,
so you could be like, oh, I have one.
Yeah, 8815.
Where's mine?
Dean Regas. Soon.
Maybe Brian. How big is yours?
It's very small. It's okay. Very small. It looks like a dot in a telescope. But anyway.
But still, you got one. That's cool.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, we'll talk to Dave Eicher. He's got some sway. I know he has an asteroid also too, by the way.
Oh.
Not that you're the only
one. You
want
to bump up the can I get like a slightly more important asteroid or
I know. His is higher than mine, so I do okay. notice those kind of things.
I bet.
So,
yeah, well.
But anyway, back to Didymus. Sorry. Didymus is the asteroid in question.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out Didymus has its own moon. So asteroids can have moons, like planets can have moons, and Pluto can have moons. And so this asteroid has its own moon.
Mm-hmm.
The asteroid's name is Didymus. The moon does not have a name. So they call it, nickname is Didymoon.
Oh, that's cute.
Isn't that kind of cute?
Yeah.
But so here's the problem is that they're going to purposely run into Didymoon.
Oh,
I know. Isn't that sad?
That seems like some bullying behavior.
Yeah. So it's 150 meters across, a pretty small object. And they're going to purposely crash into Didymoon just to see what happens if they can knock it in the way they want to knock it.
And it would knock it away. I'm thinking like a pool where they would like hit it. It would just go sailing. Like it would go like, or is it just to like knock it off course at touch?
Yeah, that's.
Or you know, I don't know.
Nobody knows. All
this
we
is
know
reckless, NASA.
This is exactly my thought. I'm glad we're actually in agreement here because I think it's ridiculous, but God. It grabs people's attention. So when this like came out in the press, everybody's like, "Oh, sweet, yeah, let's hit the thing and let's mess this up."
Oh,
so
man.
We're going to affect this moon that's not doing anything to us, just to see what we can do to it. Now, so that was my first reaction. Is like, this seems like a stretch because
and they're like buddies. You're going to separate them.
I know. Why not pick one that doesn't have its own child or something like that? I mean, it is sadder.
That's a little sidekick.
You know, it is sadder that way.
I know.
It's the moon,
right? Well, that's its little buddy.
So the other part about this that I'm really kind of skeptical is like, you know, I know NASA folks, and NASA folks plan things ahead of time.
Right.
And you can't tell me that some engineer and physicist hasn't already figured out what's going to happen. Like, do we really need to actually do the test?
Oh.
Can't we just simulate the test?
Yeah.
You know, we know the masses of things. We know what they're going to run into each other with. Why do we actually have to do it?
Yeah.
Like, are they just like, oh, boy, we're surprised at what happened to that thing that we did. We had no idea. I mean, they don't do that. So I think it's just because they want to blow stuff up. That's what I think.
Is that an option that I might blow up?
Well, you know, NASA's looking for PR stuff. And so this could be a PR stunt. Mark my words, if they end up crashing into this Didymoon on July 4th, so help me God.
Oh, my gosh.
4th of July fireworks.
That's the most America thing I've ever heard. We're just going to blow up an asteroid's moon.
Just watch out.
celebrate America.
I know. So, well, we got some time. They're not going to launch it till 2020. They haven't built the spacecraft either. And it won't run into the Didymoon until 2022. So there's still some time. I don't know if you want to write to your congressman and say, save Didymoon. Don't. What are you going to do to or
plenty of time to get t-shirts printed up.
Or speed it up. Let's fire up this Didymoon right
what
now.
What are you waiting on?
I know. What are you waiting on?
I thought Didymouse would be a cute name for the moon because like it's small, mice are small. I don't know. But Didymoon's pretty cute.
Yeah, I don't think there's an
official
name.
I'm not
trying
to be a one-upper.
So. No,
Didymouse is cute.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
That's nice.
But
is cute.
I mean, I'm doing a lot of joking, but it is a real thing that, you know, if we do see an asteroid coming at us, we have no way of deflecting it right now. We have no way of changing its course. And so doing a test might be good.
I thought you'd be all about this. I thought you'd be like, I can't wait. I'm going to mark my calendar and we're going to like watch it in real time
or
whatever.
I'm not in the explosion method. I'm in the moving the asteroid out of the way method.
Maybe that's what's going to happen.
I'm a peaceful guy, I guess. It's just I want to slowly nudge it, but not.
Well, it could nudge it.
Well, it will nudge it, that's for sure. There's no doubt it's going to nudge it.
You're like, define nudge.
That's right.
Well, I think it's exciting, except I do wish they would pick one without a moon. So
I know.
You don't break up like a little, you know, buddy duo
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
That's not cool.
So there's one other asteroid that was in the news recently. It's an asteroid named Gault, G-A-U-L-T.
Beautiful name.
It was recently struck by something, not a NASA spacecraft. It was struck by something that ignited it, actually. So there's
like on
this,
fire?
Well, so there's these pictures of it now that's streaming a tail. So it, before Ooh. It was just out there. It looks like a little dot. Looks uh-huh. like my asteroid. It looks like nothing in a telescope.
Stop mentioning your asteroid. We get it. You have an asteroid. You're like, for reference, I have an asteroid.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Go ahead. Sorry.
If only it would be struck by something, and then it would make the news more. But
yeah.
But anyway, asteroid Galt, this tail just started appearing on this thing. So in the telescopes, you could see the streaming of material coming off of it. And so it's theorized that something slammed into it and now has broken off these pieces of this asteroid. And so.
But they don't know what.
No, because we're talking about super terrifying. Small stuff that are really far away. So, but in the asteroid belt, that's theorized that there should be collisions pretty often between asteroids. So it's probably just something crossing paths with it. And
just like, instead of going around, went right through.
Yep.
Just so, bumped right into it.
Yeah. So we're going to see if we can recreate that and do it.
Sounds perfectly
do
safe.
Do it our way. That's right.
Did the American way.
The American way. So yeah, check out Asteroid Galt and check them out. We're really excited to have Dave Eicher joining us today. He was born and raised just up the road from us here in Oxford, Ohio, and he went to Miami University. He's been with Astronomy Magazine for over 3 decades, and man, he has seen it all and pretty much written about it all, too. He's just written a book with astrophysicist and guitarist for Queen, Brian May. Dave, it's great having you with us on Looking Up.
Thanks, Dean, for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, so I'm going to delve way back because you've been in this business for a long time. Now, I've heard this rumor that you started a magazine as a teenager and that magazine just took off like gangbusters. Is that correct?
I did. It was called Deep Sky Monthly, and it was sort of a high school project, and it really coincided, luckily. This was in 1977 when it got going way back in the Dark Ages, and it more or less coincided with the Dobsonian Revolution, what was called the Revolution of Large Telescopes. So amateur astronomers, for the first time, really had large scopes with these thin, easy-to-make mirrors, and that opened up a whole world of observing more galaxies and nebulae and star clusters that most people hadn't gone after. And so that magazine sort of really took off with the new exploration of stuff beyond the solar system.
And I mean, so this is, you're as a high schooler, and what kind of inspired you to start your career as a writer?
Well, I grew up in a scientific household. My father was a chemist at Miami University near Cincinnati there, and so I grew up in Oxford and was around the chem lab. And of course, you never want to do precisely what your dad did, but I was always very interested in the sciences. I more or less wanted to be a physician and made the mistake, at least financially, of going to a star party one night, and I saw Saturn through one of those little Criterion RV6 dinoscopes, a little, you know, Newtonian reflector, and I was just blown away by the fact that you could walk outside from a house and see Saturn in such magnificent detail, and that really hooked me, and I was just really into it, and the local club there needed a writer about galaxies, deep sky objects, and so they said, well, this kid should be the victim and should do it, and that's how the whole thing sort of got started.
It all started with Saturn. I've heard that one before. That's a good
yeah.
story.
So we read that you've been at Astronomy Magazine is for 34 years, is that right?
Yeah, it was 1982 I came here
wow.
straight from Miami, so I guess it's been even a little bit longer than that now, so it's a lot of fun and very busy, but doing a magazine, even though now it's a lot of digital stuff as well as the print, of course, it's very relaxed compared to, say, newspaper journalism. So it's a lot of fun, and you get to meet great, great people, astronomers, of course, and planetary scientists. And, of course, you guys know one of the great things about astronomy is you get to go to great places because they build observatories in alluring mountain locations.
And in addition to the magazine, the print magazine, there's lots of other ways you guys get the word out. Is there some particular media that you're really loving working with nowadays?
Well, we do. We have a website, and that hosts a lot of stuff with videos and with blogs and other writings, lots of news stories on the web. And so all that stuff goes out into social media as well. So, you know, it's funny. The print actually for us has held steady at about 100,000 subscribers, which is kind of remarkable for print these
days.
Oh, yeah. That it being steady. But of course, everyone who's younger than I am mostly wants to look into their phone all day, of course. So you have to do a lot of digital and video and other things like that, and that's going gangbusters as well. So, you know, being in this business means you're busier than ever. You have to do more things than you used to have to do because the people who get the print really don't want the print to go away yet. So it sort of condemns you to a very busy existence here, but there's a lot of stuff that you can get into in all these media now, which is fun.
Well, we mentioned that you have written a book, and you've written it with somebody that I am really, really a huge fan of. Not that I'm not a huge fan of yours, but, and that's Dr. Brian May, which is incredible. What is it weird to ask what he's like?
Wait. First, for people like me who don't really know things about pop culture, can you tell us who Brian May is?
Dean.
Well, Brian May, believe it or not, is an astrophysicist, and he's a PhD astrophysicist. He was a guy who was investigating, of all things, the zodiacal dust in the solar system about 1970 in Tenerife, and he was almost done with his dissertation, his doctorate, and then his hobby sort of got in the way because this band became sort of successful, Queen. And,
just a little band, Dean, called Queen. Oh, have you heard of that? Are you familiar with
Dean? I've heard of him as the scientist, Dr. May, but I didn't know the other thing.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, we weren't able to reveal until now that "We Will Rock You" was really a song about asteroids.
That's hilarious.
So he, to the horror of his family at that point, he left his research program and you know the got going with the band, and it all worked out okay, of course, in the end. But
everybody's,
he actually went and the family was comfortable. But he actually went back and finished his degree in 2008, believe it or not, and is really into a bunch of things that he's very passionate about. Astronomy is one of them, and planetary science, and he's very much into stereoscopy, stereo imaging, these two images that are slightly different that you can see side by side and get a 3D view of objects. Was very fashionable in Victorian times, and you can actually create these 3D images from lots of sources when you have images that are shot close to each other, like from space. And so we did this book, Mission Moon, that is looking back on the 50th anniversary of the Apollo missions, the space race, including the Soviet program, you know, which for a long while there had a very hard intention of landing on the moon as well, and that whole era in stereo. So we have 150 stereo views that Brian has produced in this book that have never, most of which have never been seen before in stereo. So it was a really exciting and fun project. And you ask what he's like. It's very, very easy to hang out with Brian and to work with him because he's really he's a smart guy, and he's a very, very nice guy, and he's a wise person. There's a difference between intelligence and wisdom, you know, and he has them both. So he's a fun, very nice guy to work with because he's a wonderful person.
Oh.
See, there you go.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that good to hear that?
It is good to hear that. I also think it's hilarious that he's so good at his hobby. Like, it wasn't even like,
right.
I mean, he's like, oh, I guess I'll do this music. I mean, it's amazing. I think he's incredible, and I love Queen. And thank you for indulging me to answer that question, Dave, about
well,
what he's
course.
Like
and,
a
I
little
mean,
bit.
He loves this stuff. I mean, he's when Queen are on tour, which they were last year when we were working on the book, they will be this coming year again in North America. I mean, he's up in the middle of the night. I don't think he ever sleeps, right? He was up in the middle of the night, you know, fiddling with these images after a show here, there, and everywhere. You know, he loves this stuff.
Well, this year we've got a big anniversary coming up. This is the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing. I assume that'll probably be in Astronomy Magazine, or is there any other cool stories we should be looking for this year?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on with the magazine. Of course, observationally, we have a big eclipse coming up and so on, but the big theme of the coming months is, as you say, the 50th anniversaries of Apollo. So we've got a bunch of stories. We've talked to a number of astronauts, participants, and we've started to run these stories already, starting with the anniversary of Apollo 8 with Jim Lovell, doing interviews and so on with us, and I've talked to Rusty Schweikart and Mike Collins and Buzz Aldrin and a number of people, and it's just amazing that given how much has been written about the space program, that they say things that are really kind of incredible and fresh, you know, remembering their experiences, you know, Rusty Schweikart talking about what was it like to sort of sit there and feel you know, a Saturn V rocket going upward, and you know, that it's like jostling around when you're in a train and a sleeper car, and the computers are trying to keep this thing, you know, precisely vertical. So it's like jostling around and feeling those little oscillations back and forth on track of a train going down the track in that way, and, you know, what it was like for him to spacewalk and so on. It's incredible to read these amazing, vivid recollections of these astronauts who thankfully are still with us.
Well, and that's got to be the best part of your job is, you know, interviewing all these pretty famous and historic figures and getting the firsthand accounts. And that's something you guys do really, really well at Astronomy Magazine. So thanks for that. And we'll look forward to it. And thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
So the observatory works with lots of kids, whether on outreaches or field trips. And, you know, you talk to a lot of kids, Dean, of course, and we get some great questions from kiddos. And we're going to talk about one today that actually, again, sometimes are just good questions for adults, too. So this is kind of one in honor of your favorite holiday, Valentine's Day.
All right.
You seem real gently excited. It's nice. All right. So stars are different colors.
Correct.
Okay, I tried to say that with some confidence, but then I was like, this is not the kid question, but I want to make sure that's true.
Yes.
Okay, so does the color of a star indicate its age? Like, are red ones?
Red ones.
Really old? Old, or what's the deal?
Yeah, so that's a real good question and a common one we get is, so the color of the star, does that tell us... What does that tell us?
And what are the color options? Can I get
the color
palette?
Options? That's right. We'll go from red to blue. So it goes, you could be red, orange, yellow, white, or blue.
Ooh.
So any of those and any variations in between.
Mm-hmm.
So our sun is mostly white with a little yellow. It looks a lot yellower through our atmosphere.
Yellower,
yes. And then there's lots of blue stars up in the sky. Like if you think of Orion's Belt stars are all blue.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got big red stars and small red stars too. But we got a big red star in Orion called Betelgeuse.
Right.
And so there's
not the movie, the
actual star. And so there's this idea that used to be in fashion that the redder the star is, the older the star is.
Mm-hmm.
And Betelgeuse is an example because...
Like the deeper red brighter red?
The deeper red.
Okay.
And so because Betelgeuse is a big red star near the end of its lifetime, so it's going to soon explode into a supernova and die.
Why doesn't NASA just run into that then?
They should.
It's just an idea.
It's a little farther, but...
I'll send a text message to somebody over there.
I mean, if it's gone anyway.
Yeah.
But that turns out to not be the case, that just because it's red doesn't mean it's old. But that's what we astronomers used to think. They used to associate the color with age. But you could have a very old blue star. You could have a very old yellow star. It doesn't really matter.
So Betelgeuse just happens to be old and red.
And red. Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Makes sense.
So what the color mostly tells us is the temperature of the star. So the color is an indication of the light that's coming off of it and the temperature from the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And so red stars are all cooler than white stars and blue stars. Blue stars are the
hottest. I would think blue would be cooler.
I know.
Why are they trying to mess with us?
Well, if you think of like gas flames, you know, the flames on those, yeah, the bluer the light is, the hotter the flame is. And so the red stars are the coolest. So Betelgeuse is somewhere in the 3,000-4,000 degree range. Mm. And a big blue star like the stars in the Orion's Belt are in the tens of thousands of degrees. Mm. And so that's something you can definitely check out in this, my favorite month of February. Look for the red Valentine star in Betelgeuse.
Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Dave Eicher for joining us and for humoring me with my questions about Brian May.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We really appreciate you listening and would love to hear from you. You can drop us a note with topic or guest ideas or questions about space on Facebook or Twitter, or email us at lookingup@wvxu.org.
Parents, we hope you'll share Looking Up with your kids and send us any questions they may have. Or if you have questions, we want to hear those too.
You can subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts and give us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y question mark, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.